The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and this programme comes to you from the Commonwealth Institute in London. And those taking part are Dilys Powell, Frank Muir, Anne Scott James, and Dennis Norden. Here's round one to test their vocabulary. 2 marks if they get the meaning of the following words right. Dilys Powell, what is ectoplasm?
Ectoplasm is concerned with spiritualism. And gifted mediums like Frank produce or appear to produce in their mouths a substance which may be there or may not be there, but which forms itself into something or other.
Absolutely right. 2 marks. It's a supposed viscous substance exuding from the body, I think usually from the mouth, like Frank did, of a spiritualistic medium during a trance. Now, Dennis Norden. Dennis, what is roseola?
I know it's medical, and I think it's indelicate.
Shingles, could it be?
I don't know. I don't think you can have shingles in indelicate places. If they meet in the middle, you've had it, yeah. I don't know, roseola. It's either that or it's some kind of fizzy drink made with roses.
It is a medical term. It's the rosy red rash that afflicts you in measles, and it's also the name given to the other kind, which is German measles. Now, Anne Scott James. Anne, what's the meaning of sudorific?
Well, rowing the boat trace would be sudorific. It means sweat-making.
That's it. It means that, exactly. Now, Frank, no. Frank, what is a soursop?
Soursop? A soursop is a milksop in a thunderstorm.
It's a perfectly splendid idea, Frank. I can't give you any marks for it yet.
Or a spongy lemon.
Yes. It's a fruit, like a lemon. It comes from the West Indies. And it's also the name of the tree on which the fruit grows. And I do, in fact, know the name of the tree, and that's all I do know, which is called Annona muricata. 2 marks it is. Well, before we begin round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and I hope that the two women members of the team will go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask them where the quotations come from. Now, Dilys Powell and Frank Muir, your quotation is, "Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth." And Anne Scott James and Dennis, yours is, "More matter with less art." And then at the end of the program, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their idea of how these came to be said or written. Well, on now to round two, which is a round of odds and ends. 2 marks for correct answers. Dilys Powell, what is or was the king's evil?
Something comes to my head called scrofula.
Absolutely rightly.
It was called the king's evil because there was a belief that if the king touched you, he could cure it.
Yes, absolutely right. Well done. Dennis Norden, who wrote Lamb's Tales from Shakespeare?
Well, it's a chance in a million, but I'll take it. Lamb.
One lamb or two?
Two.
All right. 2 marks it is. Charles Lamb and his sister Mary Ann Lamb wrote these short prose versions of the, well, the more respectable of Shakespeare's plays, and Mary did the comedies and Charles did the others. Anne Scott James, what is the Almanach de Gotha, G-O-T-H-A, Almanach de Gotha?
Well, it's the sort of 400 of Germany. It's the Brett of Central Europe.
1.5 out of 2. It's a genealogical, this is the bit where the nobility come in, a genealogical, diplomatic, and statistical annual, but it covered all the states of the world, and it's been published in French since 1763 by Justus Perthes of Gotha. Mm. Now, Frank, what and where is the Bridge of Sighs, and why is it so called?
Ah, yes, right. You're in Venice, on a gondola, right about the middle, and you're in the Grand Canal, up the north end, towards the Lido. Mm-hmm. Right, can you... got a picture?
Yes.
So Mark's Square is in front of you. On the right-hand side, there's a frightful sort of pale pink square birthday cake, which is the Doge's Palace. And there's a little canal goes alongside that. And there's a rather grey, dreary building beside that, which is the old prison. Mm. Right. Now, incline your eyes slightly upwards, and bridging the Doge's Palace and the prison is a rather sinister, enclosed bridge, arched. And that is the Bridge of Sighs, because when the prisoners were condemned by the Doge, they were then hustled across the bridge into the prison.
Two marks. Well done. On our round of who, why, and what questions, again, two marks for correct answers. Dennis Powell, what is or was Attic Salt? S-A-L-T.
Attic Salt was kind of wit.
Why?
Well, because it was expected from the Athenians.
Yes. And why did they call it salt? Any particular reason?
Because salt is a kind of sharpens you up.
Yes, I think that'll do. Two marks. Attic Salt is elegant or delicate wit. Attica is where Athens was. And both in Latin and Greek, salt was a common term for wit, for sparkling thoughts, which were well expressed. Dennis Norton, what do we refer to as dark meat and white meat, and why?
Oh, this is a soppy question. We refer to dark meat as dark meat, and we refer to white meat as white meat. And why we do it is because it's the only way you can distinguish between the two.
casting your mind to a particular sort of meaty object, which bit is which?
The breast is the lighter bit, and but why is it? Well, you mean it because we don't like to say bosom and leg.
That's right.
Breast.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. You've got your two marks.
Very well done.
Dark meat and white meat are usually the dark-coloured leg meat and the white-coloured breast meat in poultry. And they used, of course, to be called, as they should be, breast and leg meat. But the Victorians stopped all this because it was very indelicate to use such words as breast meat and leg meat.
My wife is very fond of the clerical bit.
Well, Anne Scott-James now. Why don't we speak of having roast pig and roast sheep for dinner?
Well, it's a euphemism, it sounds nice.
But why?
You just don't like to think of that thing after you had it in the backyard running around with all its little fluffy wool on. You don't want to say, have some sheep.
Absolutely no marks at all. These terms were pig and sheep were considered frightfully lower class, and it was correct to adopt the French terms of porc and mouton, and it goes right back to the time when the Normans took over, and when French was the court language. Frank Muir, why is Monday called Monday, and what's the meaning of Monday-ish?
I was always taught to believe that it was Moon Day.
You're absolutely right.
And Monday-ish means a touch of the drearies, really. one faces the week ahead. In other words, the frivolity of the weekend is over. And hard work sets in.
That's good enough, that's two. And there is a slight gloss on your last bit. It is the moon's day, just as Sunday was the sun's day. Monday-ish, in fact, began among people who worked too hard or thought they had on Sunday. It was used among the clergy, feeling you'd had a frightfully heavy day on Sunday, and therefore on Monday you felt Monday-ish. But now, as Frank's quite right, nowadays all of us use it if we're feeling a bit slack and hungover on Monday morning. On our round of words which are pretty difficult, but in order to help members of the team to give the meanings, we've tried to put them into a sentence in their proper context. From the scene described, can you tell me in your own words what happened or is about to happen? And the difficult word gives the answer. Three marks if you get these things right. In Victorian days, a nicely brought up young lady was innocent of such matters, so that it was not until the start of her honeymoon that poor little Lavinia Tightlace discovered to her horror that her new husband was a crinite man. C-R-I-N-I-T-E. A crinite man.
Well, I can only concede he had a mane.
Yes, well, nearly.
He had a mane.
Well, yes, put it another way.
I wouldn't like to go any further. He had a mane.
Yes, you have a
he
mane.
He was very hairy.
Yes, that's absolutely right. Well done. 3 marks. Now, Dennis Norton, the man looked down gloatingly at the girl who was his prisoner. What are you going to do? She asked tearfully. The man smiled evilly. I am going to mure you.
Oh, said. Charming.
Charming.
Poor kid.
Slight variation of spelling. M-U-R-E.
Well, to mure means to send up the wall.
Eventually it might.
Or end wall.
Yes, you've got the whole sense of it, Dennis, but...
I see. Imprisoned.
That's it.
Oh, yes, I see. Yeah. Yes, sorry, imprisoned.
3 marks it is. Mure means to confine, as if in prison, to shut up, and similar to the word immure.
In my dictionary of names, it says young and noble.
Anne Scott James, the lady explorer continued with her lecture. And what is more, she said, throughout my journeys in Australia and New Zealand, I can honestly say that I never found a catipo under my bed.
Spelled how?
K-A-T-I-P-O.
An insect. Mm-hmm. Yes, a rather nasty, dangerous, biting, stinging insect.
All right. 2 out of 3. Catipo is a venomous black spider that lives in those parts. Frank Miller, here's a Russian one, in case I get the pronunciation wrong. Alexis snorted contemptuously. My poor Ivanovich, he sneered. I'm afraid that your kumis is worse than your kvass.
Filthy. Round this way, isn't it? Kvass is a drink.
Yes?
It's a sort of homemade drink.
Mm-hmm.
In the Russias, it's very popular.
Yeah.
And traditional.
And kumis?
Kumis? Isn't it?
It's been another drink.
Yes?
Another drink.
Yes.
A bit stronger than the other one.
Yes, absolutely right. Kumis is a fermented drink made from mare's milk. And kvass is Russian rye beer. And now we come to the last round and go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier in the program. For 2 marks, Dennis Powell, can you give me the origin of the quotation, "Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth"?
It's spoken by Mark Antony in his funeral oration over the body of Caesar in Shakespeare's Julius Caesar.
All right, that's 2 marks it is. Now, Anne Scott James, the origin of your quotation, more matter with less art.
Well, I think it was spoken by Gertrude in Hamlet or the Prince of Denmark by William Shakespeare.
Absolutely right. 2 marks again. And now I'm going to ask Dennis and Frank to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And on this occasion, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So, back to Frank Muir. Oh, pardon me, thou bleeding piece of earth.
If a stranger came up to me and said, "Tall sir, what is your most awful experience?" I wouldn't have to rack my brains. I would know instantly. The whole thing was entirely my wife's fault. You see, I went to Corsica with my wife. It's to be a second honeymoon, fool that I was. It was to be a sort of second honeymoon. And there we were. We decided one evening to drive into this little town of Calvi, which has nightlife at Calvi. And we parked up in the citadel in front of some green doors which said Garage Militaire, whatever that means. And we decided to go skipping across the beach at Calvi under the trees. When we collected the car, there was a little bit of white paper under the windscreen wiper. And my wife said, that's a papillon. So I said, no, it's a bit of white paper. So she said, no, it's a no infringe. That's what they, it's a butterfly. They call it, when you get a summons, a parking summons, they put this little white paper, which flutters, and the French call it a papillon, a butterfly. And I shoved it in my pocket and said, well, let's go and eat, and then we'll look at it. So where should we park the car? And then we drove down to the quay, and my wife said, look, there's one of those underground car park things there. There's a lovely expanse, there's a few cars in it, and a huge open space, and it's undercover and lights. So I drove up this little ramp thing and parked the car, and we went and had this meal up in the Citadel, which was good Corsican meat, which is rather like eating the soles of one of those shoes, which is guaranteed for a year. And we went back to collect the car, and it wasn't there. And neither was the car park. And we heard vroom, vroom, and we saw this ship just sailing away with it, rather in the direction of the mainland. Anyway, we got the plane over to France and collected the car off the boat. And suddenly, there was a complete general strike. And all ships were stopped sailing between the coast of France and islands like Corsica. And it was 3 weeks later that we arrived back in Corsica. We drove like fury towards the gendarmerie at Calvi. And I stopped for a wash and brush up and in our little place. And in the 3 weeks, one of the things, my hair grows rather quickly. And rather than face the gendarmes like this, I got out a pair of scissors, looked in the bathroom mirror, adjusted the wings of the bathroom mirror, and cut the back of my hair with a pair of nail scissors. Now, the most extraordinary thing is that your brain works in a peculiar way, and you think you're, when you're looking in the mirror, you think your arm's going that way. And actually, it's go. Well, I cut an eighth of an inch off the bottom of my left ear. Because we're in this terrible hurry, and there was bleeding profusely. So I reached in my pocket and found a little bit of paper and tore a bit off and stuck it on the bottom of my ear and stinched the flow of blood. And we arrived at the gendarmerie, and there's a very, very nasty gendarme indeed there, very big and fat. And I handed him the our little papillon, which is rather crumpled, which is in my, and he looked at it. And he gave me a form, a little form to fill in, name, address. I wrote that in. It said, occupation. There's only a tiny little space. I couldn't say, well, for many years I was co-writer with Dennis Norden, and so I put half author. He looked up, and he burst into a terrible laughter, and kept on making terrible remarks, like, which half and what does the other half do, and this sort of thing. It struck him as terribly funny. Then he smoothed out the papillon and said, où est le numéro? So I turned anxiously to my wife. What did he say? What did he say? He said, where's the number? The number was missing from the papillon. So I thought long and hard for a moment, reached up to my ear, removed the little piece of paper I'd stuck on my ear, unwound it, and it was the number for my papillon covered in blood. But then, of course, he said, ah, merci. Then, of course, my ear started bleeding again, all over his desk and everything. And he was half laughing and half furious, the blood all over the thing, and suddenly he scribbled a bit of paper, thrust it towards me, and started shouting and waving his arm. Well, imagine my predicament. There I was, bleeding to death. I said, what is it? And I said, listen to what he's saying. Why don't you learn French? He's saying, a pardon, may thou bleed in peace, half author.
Terrible things happened in France. Now we go on to Dennis Norden, and if you remember, his quotation was, more matter with less art.
Well, this quotation was very much bandied about just after my 14-year-old nephew had his accident. You probably read about young Arthur's accident. He got his head stuck through a hole in a Henry Moore statue. Well, you see, he was being taken round the National Gallery, and he saw this great sculpture of Henry Moore's called The Mother. He's a bit dim, young Arthur, and something in his twisted little mind associated it with a comic photograph he'd had taken at Brighton the previous summer. On the pier, they have these cardboard cut-out figures with a hole at the top where you stick your face in. Now, you know Henry Moore's very characteristic sculpture. Arthur saw this hole. He thought, I'll have another photograph. And before he could say knife, his head was through it. And he couldn't get it out. Well, of course, there was ructions about it, and they tried all sorts of ways. And it was all over the papers that evening. And around about 11:30, the curator came round to see me about it, to enlist my help. Well, I couldn't understand his agitation because I don't really know very much about sculpture. When he started carrying on and said, Mr. Norden, you realise the only way we can extricate your nephew is to smash the statue. I said, well, that's, you know, do you want the lend of a sledgehammer? You know. And he sort of looked very taken aback, and he said, that statue of Henry Moore's is one of the cultural treasures of the world. Are we to demolish this masterpiece of the ages simply in order to extricate one foolish schoolboy? So I looked at him a bit funny, you know, and I said, what are you suggesting? He drew a deep breath and he said, I'm asking you whether you can persuade his parents to let him stay there. I said, well, it doesn't promise much of a future for a child, does it? He said, I promise you we will do everything in our power to keep his life as normal as possible under the circumstances. In fact, the Arts Council have promised us a special grant. So he said, Mr. Norden, it's that child or the statue. And I said, well, let's go along and see Arthur, you see. I must say, young Art was very, very cheerful under the circumstances, you know. Hello, Uncle. He said, got me head stuck. You know, because he's dim but observant, you know. Sort of, you know, Baden-Powell tea. And I said, Arthur, what are you doing there? He said, I've got them all going, haven't I? And I realized there was something in his tone that was relish. I said, you're enjoying this, aren't you? He didn't say anything. And I decided it was time for the psychological approach. I said, Arthur, what size collar do you take? He said, 10.5. I said, well, from very shortly now, you'll be taking size 8.5. He said, why? I said, because we're going to go round to the back of you, seize your feet, and pull very hard and long. He said, do you think I'd come out? I said, you will come out. Your ears might not. Before I'd finished the sentence, he was standing by my side. And it was after this that this quotation began to appear in the papers, because they'd all carried the photographs. You see, they did this great sort of before and after thing. They showed the photograph of Arthur within the Henry Moore statue, you know, with a caption which said, Henry Moore's the mother with young Arthur inside, you see. And then they showed the empty statue with a caption, Moore Mater with less art.
Means that by your vote, the contest of the stories is won by Dennis Norden, but it brings us to a final score in which, nevertheless, Dillis Powell and Frank Muir win the entire contest by 4 marks from Anne Scott James and Dennis, and that also brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir, and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason, and presented by the BBC.